You getting Elite Smash and me saying like, hey, you want to get me to Elite Smash? You're like, take mine. This took you 80 years to achieve.
I don't like it anymore. Really.
Bumblebee Tuna, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Ikwitsuwacha. Ikwitsuwacha.
Let me guess. White Devil, White Devil.
You speak Wachutu?
Lucky guess. Indeed. That is the first time me speaking with Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory over here, the first time in the history of this show, over 100 episodes, over 3 years, saying, not starting the show with Hello Everyone, instead, Bumblebee Tuna, which is Algonquin for the good land. That's not true. That's mixing two movies. but indeed, Gus over there, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, and let me tell you a little bit of what we do here on the show. Every week we watch a movie. We then take to the pod to discuss said movie, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. That's when we take the movie we just watched and we submit it to the factory. That's where we take that film and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same story, same everything, just modern booking for the modern audience. Now, then we have a little questioning time. Now, as I've mentioned, this pretty much the last couple, 20 episodes, we are evolving, doing different things for the factory, different castings, little ordeals, taking like a animated movie, imagining it live action instead of doing, you know, a relative factory that we normally would do. So things might get crazy. Then we have a little bit of a questiony time at the end. And here we are closing out. Now, time of recording, it's July 1st, but hey, you don't need to know that. I just told you, but forget it. Take the little pen from Men in Black. Flash yourself. We're here. June Carrey. Last day of June Carrey here. Watching Jim Carrey films. We watched Dumb and Dumber. We watched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And here we are with what? Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Ace Ventura. When Nature Calls. And it's not July Carrey. We're not doing any of that. No. It's still June Carrey because it's like Christmas. It's Christmas every day of the year if you believe. If you have the spirit.
If you just believe.
That's the theme song to June Carrey.
Is it?
It is now.
You know, there was a time where I could get my hair up into a Ace Ventura faux, but I can't. I can't anymore.
Oh, pompadour.
Yeah. There was a time that I could get my hair up.
Take one of these and call me in the morning.
Yeah.
If I put my long ass hair into a pompadour like that, I'd probably look more like Jimmy Neutron, which is coincidentally also directed by Steve Odekirk, who directed Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls. Why are we doing this one, the sequel to Ace Ventura, as opposed to the first one, Pet Detective? Why?
My reasoning for this one is I actually prefer When Nature Calls to the original. The original holds a special place in my heart. I think it is very good. I think this one's better. But same deal we saw with pretty much most, I would say argue, most sequels of comedy movies is it does a lot of the same jokes and just builds upon things and whatnot. So kind of falls in that same formula. However, I mean, growing up, me personally, I didn't know that there was another Ace Ventura movie for a very long time. I just assumed that this was the Ace Ventura movie. I did not know that there was this first film dealing with the dolphins and Dan Marino. And I actually find myself watching that one more, the original more, because I watched this one so much growing up. When Nature Calls, because we have this on VHS, and it's the best cover of Jim Carrey riding on the back, basically jet skiing on the back of two crocodiles.
Please. They're probably alligators.
Maybe. Who knows? There's no, literally no way to find out. This is, to me, one of the movies, I'd say probably top two movies I think of when I think Jim Carrey. It's Dumb and Dumber, it's When Nature Calls, because these are the two that I kind of grew up with. I guess I grew up with, like, The Mask and Batman Forever, These are the two that I really, really think of. Dumb and Dumber and When Nature Calls, because I think When Nature Calls is, I mean, you've said it. You and I are pretty keen to liking stupid comedy films, and this one's pretty stupid, but pretty great.
Yes, indeed. I find this one to be, of the two Ventura movies, the one I watch the most, as same as you, one grew up with. I didn't see Pet Detective I don't even know. I was almost in my 20s, I think. I was probably late teens when I saw the first one for the first time. And it was mostly out of convenience. It just never came across like my plate. We owned the second one for some random reason. And
our dad owned a cabin, and we spent the weekends there, and that was one of the few movies that we did end up getting there, because we had DVD player, high class, we had the Ace Ventura double pack. That was one of the DVDs that we just, like, strictly had at the cabin.
Right. It's funny because we saw this movie, the sequel, first. We grew up with the sequel. Then we watched the first one. And it's one of those comedy movies that it reuses a lot of the same jokes from the first one. Brings a lot of those same jokes back. And it's like funny. You know, it worked the first time. So if it's not broke, don't fix it kind of deal. And it was like the opposite effect. Like, I saw the first one. And I'm like, oh, they do this joke in the other movie, but in the other movie it's bigger. Like, they, for example, they're on the airplane, right, and Ace is eating the sunflower seeds, and he's spitting out the seeds on the guy's arm. It's a giant mountain of seeds, and it's so fucking funny. And the first one, he does that, but it's just like a couple seeds. Like, it's just to show he's kind of like rude and obnoxious. He like chews the sunflower seeds, spits them out into his hand, and sprinkles them on to some lady's desk, I believe. And there's just a couple. So, like, it was funny in the first one, but in the second one, you see this big mountain. It's probably even more hilarious. You know what I mean? That was the intention.
I think, but the second one dives a lot more into spoofs as well. At least I can't really think of many in the first one where they're, like, spoofing other movies.
I can't either off the top of my head.
Where the second one has its opening, it's going off of that scene, has the scene where there's something on the wing, some thing, which is from Twilight Zone. So I feel like there's a lot more moments like that, a lot more pop culture references throughout.
Did you ever see that Twilight Zone episode?
I have. That's one of the few I have seen. Twilight Zone creeps me out. Like, even the OG ones, they're creepy. Some of them are real creepy.
Some of them are. Some of them are really good. I mean, they're all pretty good, but
that one's a young Shatner, right?
Yeah, that young Shatner piece. That one's a little creepy. The thing that is on the wing is a little goofy looking, but there's some shots I'm like, I don't like that.
Yeah. It's a gremlin, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a gremlin.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, and yeah, what you just said, where you, like, watched them in reverse, same goes for, like, the opening of this movie, opening with a cliffhanger spoof, Stallone movie. I saw a cliffhanger, I've only seen cliffhanger once, but I saw it years and years after watching this movie for, you know, my whole childhood, and watching it, I was like, I couldn't get it out of my head. It's almost like listening to, like, a Weird Al song your entire life, that rendition of that song, and then switching to the real version. You're like, it's not as good. Yeah. It's very similar. Like, it's like, the opening of Cliffhanger is one of, like, the greatest suspense openings of all time, and I'm, like, watching, so I'm intense. Like, this is hilarious. Yeah. They're like, doing what Ace Ventura did.
Yeah, they're ripping that movie off. Yeah. How dare Cliffhanger do that? Oh man.
Hang on.
I'm watching this movie with roommate Matt. He had never seen an Ace Ventura ever. So this is his introduction. And it starts, and it got to a point, it's in the opening scene, he's like, what is this movie? Like, what am I watching? He's like, is this just a movie about nothing? I'm like, no, it's just an opening scene. It's a spoof on Cliffhanger. He's like, oh, I just thought it was like just ridiculous nonsense the whole time. I'm like, no, no, it'll get there. But, you know, the lines.
It's pretty ridiculous nonsense the whole time.
The helicopter at the beginning is going, and Ace turns around. He's like, you know, you can put somebody's eye out with that thing. Matt was like, what the heck? And then when he climbs up a little higher and he feeds the bird.
Hungry fella?
He's like, what the fuck is this? And then the whole bit with the raccoon, and it's a cliffhanger spoof, and the raccoon falls, and it's all dramatic and stuff. But then it cuts to wherever they're at, Tibet or something, and it shows the monks and the giant staircase to the temple, and then it says the written and directed by, I'm like, Matt, this is why this movie is the way it is. And it says Steve Odekirk. And to him and to me and to you, Steve Odekirk is the
mastermind,
and star of the greatest comedy movie of all time, Kung Pao, Enter the Fist. Yeah. And which is just irreverent buffoonery. To the max, to the best.
That should be like the documentary of that film's title. Irreverent buffoonery, a Kung Pao tale.
That's kind of what Tommy Lee Jones said to Jim Carrey. He's like, I can't sanction your buffoonery. Or I can't...
yeah, with Tommy Lee Jones being an ass.
Being a Tommy Lee Jones.
He wasn't being Tommy Lee Jones. That was the issue. Anyways, back to Ventura.
Yes, it's directed by Steve Odekirk. And a funny story about how he got involved in this movie. Well, he and Jim Carrey had been friends for a long time. I think he worked on Living Color with Jim Carrey. I think he was a writer on it. So he's writing for this movie. He's writing When Nature Calls. Jim Carrey... He did not want to do this movie. He did not want to do a sequel for many reasons. One, he was becoming a very big star. He was a huge star at this point. This came out in 95, year after his
big year.
Huge debut year. Yeah. And here he is a year later already doing a sequel to Ace Ventura. He did not want to get pegged down. He didn't want to be just known for being Ace Ventura. He didn't want to just be stuck doing that
the rest of his career. You know what I
mean? Yeah. He didn't want to do multiple films of the series, let alone a sequel. But he had signed a deal with the studio that he had to do like a multi-picture deal. So to honor the deal and to conclude it, he kind of had to do this. It was a big hit. It made a lot of money, and the studio wanted to do another one. And what it ultimately came down to was money. So he's negotiating his.
What did it come down to?
Money.
There you go. I was like, you idiot.
Say it right.
You're gonna say it. Quote it right.
Came down to money. So he's negotiating his price. And it was his buddy, Steve Odekirk, who's writing this movie. He's like, listen, you should get $15 million for this movie.
A million?
That's half the... Yeah, $15
million. That sounds fair.
That's half the movie's budget. This movie had a $30 million budget.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I've always been curious. This is probably more or less a stupid question. But a film's budget includes, like, actors' payroll and everything, too?
Yeah.
I guess I always thought that was, like, the production stuff and not the actors. I thought the actors were just separate. That's, I guess, a stupid thing to think, but Yeah, that's pretty wild. So he was going to take half the budget. That's almost like requesting so much money to, like, hope they don't make it.
I'll do it, but
for $30 million. I'm like, that's the budget. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he could probably ask for that, too.
Give me that Marvel money. They're like, sir, Marvel is almost bankrupt at this point in time.
And so Jim Carrey listened to his buddy, obviously, tried to get $15 million, half the film's budget, and was granted. So he's getting paid half the film's budget. And then the original director, his name escapes me right now, left the production. I don't remember why either. I just know he left.
Was he the director of the first one as well, or new
maybe
director?
I can't remember. That's a factoid I should have paid more attention to. But the fact is, he left a week into shooting. So now they're scrambling to find a director. So Steve Odekirk got the job as the writer, and he's like, fuck, now I only have a $15 million budget to make this movie. And it's like, not his fault, but it was kind of his doing in a way. But anywho, another reason Jim Carrey didn't want to do the sequel is he was worried about how people would take the portrayal of the natives in this movie. A big portion of this movie, the whole setting of this movie is in Africa.
Yes.
And it's basically Ace Ventura, pet detective, is hired to find this missing bat, the sacred bat from this one tribe, the Wachatis. They need to find it within a week or so before the wedding between the princess of the Wachati and a selected male from the tribe of the Wachutu. And or else there'll be a war between the two tribes. So Ace is on the case, and he's going to try to find this sacred bat. And shenanigans ensue. Jim Carrey was worried about...
He didn't mention a bat.
I didn't mention anything because you're not talking into your microphone.
Bat?
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big plot point, though. You mentioned he's looking for the bat. He's on the case. He is, out of all the animals he loves, does not like bats.
I hate bats, Jacques. I hate them.
They're in my hair. They're in my hair.
Jim Carrey didn't like that either. He felt that Ace Ventura loves all animals no matter what, so he wouldn't be afraid of a bat.
I think that's a great gag, though.
It is a great gag.
I think that's awesome.
He was trying to change it. He wanted it to be that Ace Ventura is allergic to bats.
Nah. Him not liking them is Palpatine levels of ironic.
Yeah, it was good. And the fact that Jim Carrey didn't like that bit and the way he portrays it in the movie, like, you couldn't tell, like, that he didn't want to do that.
Yeah. 'Cause
he just goes all out, especially when it comes to the bat stuff.
Yeah. Take evil sons of Satan!
I like when he's describing why he doesn't like bats to, what's his name, Grimley? Grimwald?
Yeah, I think it's Grimwald.
And he's like the rabies and the fangs and the anyway, he was concerned about how the audience would take to the portrayal of the native tribes, whether it be seen as racist or part of it is some of the members of the tribes are seen as maybe a little on the dumb side or the naive side, and their culture is a little odd and made up, like things like spitting in each other's faces to show that they like somebody.
Really?
Like, I don't know, aren't I the popular one? He was just worried about how that would be taken. I can't have an opinion on it. Like all I can say is I've never heard those complaints or arguments or even observations about this movie.
This came out in a time, too, where it's the I mean, you just took comedy for what it was. It's just comedy. It's overblown, over-the-top comedy. And this isn't the early... I think the early 2000s is where maybe things got a little too far, a little too out of hand, like the early 2000s into, like... I'd say the early 2000s is where, like, dumb comedy became a big thing. Like, it just dumb to the extreme.
Probably early 2000s until, like... honestly, like the mid 2000 teens, like 2014 is when those kind of things started kind of going away, I think.
Because I think we already discussed it, but I mean, I think the plot of this movie is maybe not better than the first, because the first actually is a pretty fun mystery, and it's neat because it's dealing with like an NFL team and like legit NFL players, which is cool in my book because, you know, I'm a big NFL fan. And then also, that's just something you wouldn't expect in a comedy movie, them to like use legitimate like NFL fan, like NFL players and like legit stars and the biggest sport in probably America. But it was just interesting. And then this movie comes along, and this does what you'd want from a story, which is that it goes much bigger, and it really does, placing him. I mean, the first movie, he's in Miami. Like, he's in a city the entire time. This movie, like, places him in the jungle with, you know, tons and tons of animals, and has a lot of different interesting, you know, characters, bad guys. I love the scene where he's meeting the game warden that he meets? Or is the rich guy that's basically trying to... he's, like, the main bad guy, but he shows Ace his trophy room. And Ace has like a panic attack. That in and of itself is a phenomenal scene where he's like making all the noises and freaking out, and then he just comes back to normal. Like, is something wrong? He's like, no, this is a lovely room of death.
Take care now, bye bye then.
I quote that a lot. I quote this movie very frequently. That is one that I quote a lot when I play video games, because we'll come across some like dead bodies in a game, and someone would be like, there's dead bodies here, people died here, and I'll be like, this is a lovely room of death. I do quote that a lot. You know what's funny is, and correct, you know, I same as what we've been doing pretty much for the whole June Carey month is discussing kind of his movies, not so much the story, but elements of the movies we liked, because it's hard to touch base on everything. Is there anything in this movie, like joke-wise, that you didn't get growing up, but upon watching it, maybe not this time, but semi-recently in your 20s, that you like picked up on for the first time, and you're like, that's actually really funny. Is there any jokes like that in this movie? Because there's one that comes to mind where I was like, as a kid, I had a completely different read on the situation.
There is. And what was it?
Is it the masturbation scene?
It was near the end of the movie. Oh, the masturbation scene. I can tell you, when I was younger, I did not get that.
Oh, mama. I still didn't get it until I was like 20. I was like, oh.
I mean, even watching it last night, when Grindelwald comes in and he's like throws the leap over, he's like, ah!
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm meditating. If I don't finish, I get cranky. The face he's making, because he's like actively climaxing. And that's some good stuff that I didn't really pick up on.
Nah.
There's another one. I'm not thinking of it right now. Maybe it'll come to me later, but it was near the end of the movie, and I was like, I never picked up on
the
that.
The bad guy getting fucked by the gorilla?
No.
Okay.
Obviously, I knew that was going on. And to you people listening who've never seen this movie,
think about that for a second.
Yeah. How's the villain get his comeuppance? Well,
the silverback gorilla. It's his mating season. The one was right off the bat for me. I had a completely different like outlook on it for the longest time until I watched this movie in college. And it is the opening of the movie where the monk is giving him the medal and like actively trying to get him to leave. Like, the monks want him gone. as a kid, I thought it was more like it was a nicety. Like, he was like, oh, no, like, I'm supporting you the way Ace thinks it is, you know. And then they're, like, throwing a party. I always thought it was like they're throwing a party to celebrate him leaving, as in, like, it's just like a celebration for him. Like, he gets to go and do something. And instead, upon growing up and realizing that it's more like they just want him gone and they're excited that he's gone. And like, it's a lot funnier in that lens.
Yeah.
Especially the guy in his underwear, the monk in his underwear. They never act like that.
Yeah. I've never seen them act like that before. Here's one that I kind of remember thinking something different when I was younger. I haven't seen this movie in years also. I've watched it one time not too long ago, but I was pretty slapped, if you know what I'm saying. I don't remember.
Gotcha. Bear remember.
I haven't seen this in a while. When they're passing around the delicious fruit paste and Ace is licking it up. And he mentions, like, and the dinnerware is lovely, or whatever he says. And he's like, it's made from guano. Bat droppings.
Guano!
I always took it as what he was eating was guano, not that the bowl was made from guano.
I guess, yeah, me too. Because I just thought he was eating shit. Eating bat poop.
I thought he was eating bat, like, fruit mixed with bat poop. That's how I always took that. But no, the bowl is made from guano. And I really, that really clicked in later when he wakes up from being tranquilized or whatever, and he's drinking the water, and then he, like, coughs it all up. And he's like, guano bowl, collect the whole set. Because he's drinking water from a cup made of bat shit.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many great moments. The eyeball moment where he's torturing one of the bad guys, and he starts poking his eyeball.
My brother used to do that to me.
Scratching the plate, like, that's fantastic. Like a torture scene where he just takes a fork, two forks, and scratches them on a plate. It's like, no, stop it. That's awesome.
You're sick.
Yeah, it's like fantastic. The rhino scene is probably the one that comes to mind as soon as I think of this movie. It's giving birth. He's coming out. Just Jim Carrey's acting throughout this movie is like peak manic Jim Carrey. He is great. And yeah, I mean, there's so many great comedy moments in this. I mean, right down to the stairs, giant stairs leading up to the monk, you know, that could be it. And most comedy movies, that would be it. Like, oh, they're stairs. But instead they pull out a slinky. They're like, let's do a slinky bit here. That's great. Down these giant stairs. I can't think, I mentioned earlier that this one has more pop culture references, but I can really only think of those two. The cliffhanger and the Twilight Zone reference. Is there another one? Is there any others throughout? I guess the first movie does semi have a Jaws reference when he's in the shark pen thing. Because I think it plays like somewhat ominous Jaws music.
He references the Lone Ranger during the projection scene. It's like,
hi, Osu!
Away!
Honk, 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 honk. when he's making the shadow puppet and eating the guy's nuts, and he's just, like, spitting out the nuts. That was always one of the funniest things to me growing up. I still think it is. I mean, there's a ton of just great moments throughout. And I do think this is, I think we semi-talked about it, but I do think this overall is my most quoted Jim Carrey performance. Because there's just so many, or it's not even like quotes, it's like mannerisms. Like, I'll find myself walking sometimes by myself and just doing like the head bob, like the back and forth head bob. I've even dancing.
People are like, that man is a bobbin fool.
Yeah. Even dancing with the wife before, you know, just doing the Monopoly guy thing. Like, I've done that before, just like la da 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 Fantastic
movie factoid time. Movie factoid time.
Okay.
Monopoly guy. That actor and Jim Carrey share something in common. They've both appeared in a Batman movie directed by Joel Schumacher. Yes, Jim Carrey was in Batman Forever as the Riddler. The gentleman who played the Monopoly guy in When Nature Calls played Bane in Batman and Robin before he got all juiced up.
That's just an old man? They used an old man for that?
He's not an old man. He's a younger guy that's put a fake mustache on him.
Must be one of those activists.
Activist, yes.
You know what? Yeah. I think I'll try it. That's so many good moments. Like, just that. Like, there's good character moments. Like, Ace Ventura just taking it to a ridiculous degree in this movie. Where, like, that scene where the lady is wearing, what is it, fox? Or around, a fox pelt around her shoulders. And Ace Ventura punches her husband and throws him on his shoulders and wears him like a fox pelt. Like, moments like that are a little, it's just so much more extreme.
It's the pleasures of nature.
Yeah. It's just so much more extreme than the first movie. I mean, the first movie has some extremes, and the first movie is fantastic in and of its own right. I quote it a lot, too. That's why I said I think Ace Ventura, the character, might be my most quoted. I mean, there's so many times where people be like, whatever the instance, what are we looking for? What are you looking for? I'll say, I'm looking for Ray Finkel. Yeah, like, just stupid stuff like that. Just put me in, coach. I'm ready to go in.
I think of all his movies, one I quote the most, definitely Dumb and Dumber. But
can you believe this, real quick? I met some. Didn't meet him. It was a buddy of mine. I was talking to him the other day, and I quoted Dumb and Dumber. And he was like, what's that from? I'm like, Dumb and Dumber. And he's like, oh, okay. I was like, yeah, it's from this. It's from that scene when this happened. He's like, oh, I wouldn't know. I've never seen it. I'm like, what? Like, I don't understand that one. Just harkening back to our June Carey first episode of June Carey.
I would say that's the one I quote the most, Dumb and Dumber, but I sometimes catch myself, my cadence and how I talk is reminiscent of an Ace Ventura. Sometimes. Just maybe every now and then I'll talk a little different.
It's kind of a Shatner, right? Like, that's almost what it boils down to.
Maybe a little bit.
It's the cadence, the pacing, even when you just said that. Because a Shatner is what? You say a couple words and you kind of stop and go again really fast. And he kind of has that same cadence to his voice throughout.
You say a Shatner is that, like, you start and start again, stop and start again. But it's almost like every other word sounds like you're starting a new sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of periods and Shatnerisms.
Indeed.
That's why Picard's better, but that's a can of worms for another day. Which indeed. You wouldn't even know where to start in that conversation.
I would just agree.
You'd be like, Chris Pine's pretty good. I don't know.
That's what I would say.
Like, how about that Chris Hemsworth?
Hell yeah.
I would say this is overall just most quoted in terms of mannerisms. And I mean, I even right down to the beginning scene, like we mentioned when he feeds the birds, I say hungry fella a lot to my dog.
Hungry fella?
I'll look at her and say, hungry fella? Like, yeah, that. Hang on! I've used that playing video games a handful of times.
And he says that same line in later the same year in Batman Forever.
Exactly.
Hang on.
Surf's up, Big Kahuna.
He had another line that he used. I think it was in Dumb and Dumber. because he says in this movie, I'm like, oh, he said that in something else. Now I don't remember, but it was something.
There it is. There it is. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of other just lines throughout this movie that I do quote a lot. I definitely think there are some great scenes in this movie, like when he goes to the warring tribe and he kind of goes through their different challenges, fights them, so to speak. And what he does, like a log rolling one where he has to, like, maintain his balance, and he just rips the guy's skirt or kilt or whatever it may be in that culture. Yeah, loincloth, and whips it into a towel and whips him with it to knock him off. That's great. How he wins pretty much all those challenges.
Moving your face away.
I'm sorry. I'm hearing noises behind me and looking to see what they are. But he's hearing how he does all those challenges is pretty awesome. Right down to the fight. I mean, we even started the show with that scene where they keep calling him. What do they keep calling him?
Witsuwacha,
which means white devil, white devil. And they're just that fight. That's like a very Patrick Starr moment from the Fry Cook games, where it's like,
you're not, here he comes.
Yeah, Ace Ventura has to face this big, big fighter, but it's actually like this little vicious beast man. That's a phenomenal moment when he gets impaled in the leg with a spear, and he calls for his friend to throw him another spear, and he does. It goes into his other leg. I mean,
that's like a joke I'll never forget, and I've been seeing it forever, but it's one of those, it's never not funny when he's like screaming at both spears that are in his leg, and he's like,
yeah.
So he's like screaming, and then he reverses the scream.
Yeah. Three darts is too much.
One joke that made me laugh so hard last night, maybe the hardest I've ever laughed at that joke, because it's funny, but I don't know. I don't even know why it was so funny to me. But it was at the end when Ace Ventura finds or discovers the villain's plot, calls him out on it, and he's like, I'll arrest him. But the chief of police is on the villain's side. So Ace yells at Grinwald. He's like, Grinwald, hit the lights. And he like drops down. And he's like starting to scurry around. He's like, the one's right next to you. Hit it. And then like 30 seconds later, he just stops moving. He's like, do it now. It just made me laugh so hard because no one's moving or doing nothing. He's like trying to escape on his hands and knees.
Yeah. I do think that this is just the better of the two Ace Ventura movies. I don't know if it's the jokes, so to speak, or the location, the environment, whatever it may be. I think this is just, I want to say miles. I'll just say head and shoulders above the first Ace Ventura movie.
Maybe it's just more up your alley. How about that?
Maybe that. It's probably nostalgia for the jokes, because, I mean, the first Ace Ventura is fantastic. Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. Like, those moments with the glass when he's in the first movie where he's screaming and shutting the sliding door to prove that it's soundproof. I laughed so hard. That's another joke that I didn't get growing up, but watching from the first movie. But it's when him and Courtney Cox have sex, and she's like, Ace, three times? He's like, I'm sorry, I must be tired. That's a great moment. Or even the beginning of the movie where he gets that lady's dog back for her, and she's gonna pay him back, and it's just an upper torso shot of him, and she's basically giving him a blowjob, but he's like going all over the place. It's like, people are really friendly around here. It's a fantastic character. I was thinking about it before we did started recording tonight, but I think if I could choose Jim Carrey to go back and revisit a role and do another movie for it, I think it would be Ace Ventura. I think I'd like to see him do one more Ace Ventura movie, an old Ace Ventura. Like old Indiana Jones, but he doesn't get hurt and have to, you know, postpone filming.
Yeah. No, I would love to see another Ace Ventura adventure, but honestly, I want Dumb and Dumber 3 or something like that.
It already is. Dumb and Dumber 2 was Dumb and Dumber 3. Look it up. It's science.
I forgot. But you had said that you feel When Nature Calls is Head and Shoulders better than Pet Detective. Well, let me ask you this question. Let's take it to the tomato meter.
I bet When Nature Calls has a very poor reception.
So, which film has the higher score on Rotten Tomatoes?
The first one. Over, I'd almost guarantee it.
Over or under 50?
I'm honestly going to say that both of them have less than 50s. Because I could see critics not liking these movies because they're dumb comedy, so to speak.
Over under 50.
Under 50.
It has a 49.
Hey, see? I told you, both of them are going to be under 50.
Audience score. What do you think for the first one?
86.
It is actually considered a spilled popcorn. It has a 57.
Really?
Yeah, indeed.
Really?
But now let's take a look at When Nature Calls the sequel. What is its tomato meter?
The first one was a 49, you said? Yes. I'm going to say this is a 28.
Ooh, so close.
Shit.
25.
Ah.
25.
Fans? What? Fans the are going to call this... score. A 48.
No, it is widely accepted at 72%.
Hey, so it is the better. it is the best.
You're not alone.
I mean, the first one's good. I think the first one's pretty fresh. Maybe everyone's in the same boat where they watch the second one first. Like, hey, they're stealing jokes from the second one, putting them in the first one.
Everyone grew up with the second one. Even people who are like 40 years old watching the sequel.
Yeah, I mean, like, the first one has some phenomenal moments. And it is really a funny movie. There's a lot of great scenes in the first one. Ray Finkel's family is fantastic. The psychiatric hospital is really funny. There's a lot of great moments. I just think the second one, I think it's the setting of the second one just welcomes more events and comedy. And even I was just actually right before you got on to record, I was rewatching the scene where a secret agent man is playing.
I was waiting for you to finish what you're going to say. And I was going to mention that whole scene because it's such a good bit where he's like, I am a master of disguises, and then it's like him eating the bugs out of with like chimpanzees, and he's just in his like blue Hawaiian shirt sitting in a tree, not disguised at all,
him eating with the lions, eating the zebra. He's just blood all over his face, like, eat up, guys, none of this animal goes to waste.
And then, as subtle as he was, putting a hook on the back of that guy's bumper and just flying with a parachute in the air. Yeah. Like, he'll never see me.
That, the fake rhino.
The rhino is classic. We touched on it earlier, but that's like classic comedy scene.
That's right there. Worm! That is a very quoted line between the both of us.
Yeah,
because he has a little fan inside, and the fan stops working, and he's just slowly getting undressed because of how hot it is in there. And that, he's warm,
hot in these rhinos.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
and then he crawls out. He like pulls giving that birth. Line. It pulls that line in the when he's like Mayday, and it's all the fluid, and he just like lubes himself up and looks like that rhino gives birth to a full-grown man.
Yeah, dude, that scene is iconic to me, for all the right reasons. But yeah, that's, I think that's why this movie is just head and shoulders above the first. It's just the, it has those moments that are invited by the terrain. Like him driving through the jungle, like going off the beaten path with Grimwald, and singing the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang theme.
Oh, you know why that came about?
The Chitty Chitty Bang Bang theme?
He had lines that he was supposed to deliver to Grimwald.
I did know this. He had them, totally, right?
Yep. Greenwald. We keep calling him Grimwald.
The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah. Whole movie. Whole thing. Review. We've been calling him Grimwald.
Hey, we're not professionals.
Yeah. We're not getting paid for this.
Yeah. Chew you, yes.
My mistake.
No one's sitting at their computer or phone or car and going, these sons of bitches.
Some might. Yeah, he was supposed to give lines to him, but he forgot them. So in an improvised scene, he sings Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
And that's why, because there, if I recall, there are, if you look closely at him, you can see him laughing.
Greenwald?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Pretty sure you can see him, like, snickering. Especially when it's when he hits the really high pitch line. He, like, plugs his ears, but he starts to laugh.
Yeah.
And it cuts, if I recall. Because it was, I was, I feel like it was on, yeah, there, I feel like there's a clip of that. Yeah, but, yeah, those moments all, just, even the first time you meet the bad guy and he's like kind of doing equestrian. He's riding the horse and like hitting the horse with a little whip. I don't know the proper term for it, but and like Ace takes it and just whips him right in the ass with it right away. Like that's his introduction. There's so many, yeah, there's just so many memorable moments brought about by this interesting setting. Him running through the woods, getting chased by the native people, getting shot with, like, sleeping darts. Him dealing with poachers. I just think there's a lot more going on in this movie, where it's like, not only is it man in the jungle looking for this bat, he's dealing with, like, native tribes, and he's dealing with British emissaries and different things like that, where in the first movie it's like, he's trying to find the mascot for the Dolphins, and it's like a conspiracy theory around the Super Bowl. So it's not as like big. It's pretty run of the mill crime drama, where this one is like over the top big.
Indeed.
And I like the juice.
It is superior, if you ask us.
I think,
and
yeah.
Innocent baby seals.
I mean, that's what happens with this movie, though, with both movies, really, is warning. Assholes may be closer than they appear. Yeah. That, I mean, there's so many good lines. Even, I mean, this isn't this movie specifically, but thinking back to Ace Ventura's, like, first character introduction with his, I mean, he's dressed up like a UPS driver carrying a package that says fragile, and he's just chucking it around and like playing soccer with it and like slamming it on the ground and grabbing it with his feet and throwing it up in the air. And I mean, I've been saying, I quote him a lot, but the "Yes, Satan," that line from the first movie's great.
Say that what?
There's so many Ace Venturisms that are great, and you mentioned like moments like that where it's like he's crawling on the ground and like, turn off the lights. But like in the first movie where he sees that his landlord's watching TV, so he grabs a single palm and holds up the single palm and walks by the building. And then it shows that he puts it down and there's like multiple palms that he had been like ripped up and used to walk past his landlord. Like stuff like that is phenomenal.
I mean, here it is, my most quoted line from this series of Ace Ventura films is from the first one. It's when he's talking to his landlord. He's like, I think there's animals in there, whatever, and he jiggles the keys to open the door, and he's like, go ahead, snoop around.
Yeah.
I say that a lot.
Come, my jungle friends. Yeah, there's just so many... So many quotable lines. It's such a great character. And so, all right, here we are talking Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls. And are you ready to discuss this film in the factory?
Indeed. What are we going to make?
All right. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? However, for today's episode, for the last episode of June Carey, we decided that we would do a little bit, something a little bit different. Now, I mentioned earlier in the show that this is the one Ace Ventura film that I would like, or I'm sorry, the one Jim Carrey film that I would like to see a third movie be made, another movie in the series be made. Obviously, we got Dumb and Dumber 2 after many years. I would like to see Jim Carrey reprise his role as Ace Ventura. Now, the factory this week, instead of imagining what this film would look like today, what we're going to imagine today, we're gonna factory a third movie. This is something we've done somewhat before. We're going to imagine what would we want? What would we want from a third movie? First movie, like we mentioned, deals with it's all in Miami, and it deals with Ace Ventura tracking down the Miami Dolphins mascot and trying to figure out this conspiracy theory with this kicker. Second movie deals with these two native tribes in Africa that are going to go to war because the sacred bat has gone missing. Now, here we are, the third Ace Ventura film. What would we want from a third Ace Ventura film? What would you want?
Let's spitball this movie into existence. I think you and I both can agree, if we were to have any director come and do an Ace Ventura 3, we'd want our guy to come back, Steve Odekirk, indeed.
Yes, obviously, because he's the best, and we want that comedy to stay the same.
You know, this gentleman, he hasn't worked a lot in his, like, you know, he's worked a lot. He's I'm sure he's comfortable.
He's developed, in my opinion, one of the best cartoons of the late 90s, early 2000s.
Early 2000s
then, yes. And he kind of pioneered modern cartoons, I feel. Because Jimmy Neutron was like a turning point.
Yes, he directed Jimmy Neutron. And after that came out, you had a slew of CGI cartoons, including another one he created, which is Barnyard.
Yes.
The Barnyard.
Yeah, I feel, I think that's fair to say that he definitely pioneered those 2000s cartoons in a lot of ways.
That was the last feature film he directed, was Barnyard. That was in 2006.
Never liked Barnyard, but I did love Jimmy Neutron.
I do like Jimmy Neutron. And also in 2019 he's famous for doing these thumb videos where it's like thumbs that parody movies and they like superimpose a face on the thumb.
Yes.
He did a spoof of Star Wars Episode 9.
Why?
Why not?
I guess. You're like, he's comfortable. He's making thumb movies.
He's happy. Yeah. He's been rumored to be making Kung Pao 2, like, officially. He said it himself at a comic convention that he's working on Kung Pao 2. This is in 2015.
Out of...
It's not going to happen. He's almost 60 years old.
If you could meet Steve Odekirk, only one of them, Steve Odekirk, Steven Spielberg, or Martin Scorsese, who would you want to sit down and have a nice seafood dinner with, a couple drinks, and then never call him again? Who would you want to spend the evening with?
I can tell you now, it wouldn't be Martin Scorsese.
His eyebrows would make you not hungry.
Isn't it funny?
I might choose Martin Scorsese to be like, listen here, motherfucker. I like Marvel movies.
Yeah. I would want to sit down like with Spielberg, and I would want to basically convince him why Hook is good. Because he doesn't like his own movie, Hook.
And that's one of your favorites.
It is my favorite Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
I just
watched Peter Pan last night, actually, or yesterday. But
hey, you can fly, you can fly, yeah. You can fly. And I'd want to say that just like that to Steven Spielberg about Hook. But I don't know. I feel like I could get along better though with Steve Odekirk.
I feel like Steve Odekirk would be more fun because it would be more interesting, as in, like, you're not going to tell Steven Spielberg anything he probably has never heard. Whereas, like, we think Steve Odekirk's great and the things that he did is great, but how many people, like, he's not a household name, so to speak, really. Like, so, you know, you have this nerd coming up to you going, like, man, your work on Jimmy Neutron, your work, Kung Pao, one of the best comedies ever. Like, that's going to make a man shit himself.
Changed my life.
Yeah. Kung Pao. Yeah. No, that was like, that movie brought families together.
In our household.
Yeah. I think Steve Odekirk, yeah, I don't know how we got there, but Steve Odekirk definitely, yeah.
Ace Ventura 3.
Well, I know that. I'm wondering, why did I even bring up that question, though, of who would you have dinner with?
Why you said Martin Scorsese of all people?
I was thinking, like, famous directors. Quentin Tarantino, there. Then it'd be harder, because I'd be like, Quentin Tarantino would be very interesting to pick his brain, but I'd also be creeped out the entire time.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick Quentin Tarantino either. I just listened to him on the Joe Rogan podcast, and it just confirmed all my theories of how he talks. Like, when he gets, like, excited about something, like, you're not getting a word in.
Yeah.
And he's just very abrasive.
That's like, I would love to talk with George Lucas, but I know he's just a weird old guy, so I wouldn't want to talk with him.
But indeed, let's ask this question to ourselves. What animal is Ace Ventura Pet Detective looking for? What's going to cause him to reemerge all these years later as an old man Ventura?
Well, it would have to be something pretty big. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, what's the most famous animal in the world? You could do something that is, like, made up, or maybe it's an endangered species. An endangered species, the last of its kind. Hell, do a Jurassic World crossover with Ace Ventura. But it would have to be something along those lines of, like, it's the last of its kind, and it's gone, it's disappeared, or something along those lines, been kidnapped, poachers, something. But I would definitely like this film to cross many continents. It'd be like a world tour. Maybe spoof Indiana Jones a little bit in that, like, do the plane sequencing where you're going, like, from place to place, and he's getting all those little jokes in each individual place, right? What would you, if you had to choose an animal? I mean, the first thing that came to mind, just because I just watched Jaws, I was like, what if he was, like, searching for this, like, Megalodon? He's searching for this big shark somewhere.
The Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
Bigfoot.
He's searching for all the urban legends. He's like, here, we're going to West Virginia to find Mothman.
Maybe. What if there was a group that that cloned Harambe?
Jesus.
And someone steals Harambe or tries to assassinate
that him. Sounds very much like something that would happen in this movie.
And then we need Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
It'd be like Princess Mononoke, but with Jim Carrey.
I want to see that movie.
You're beautiful!
Stop, or I'll shoot.
I made it!
I wish to see with eyes unclouded. I hate.
I don't want to see that movie, actually. But I was thinking, what do you think of that? Like a world tour film. It's going all around the globe. First movie takes place in Miami. Second movie takes place in this African village or African like jungle. Third movie, maybe we go to different places. I was thinking in my head when I first saw this movie, it could be neat to bring back Courtney Cox, if possible. But I don't know how you would integrate her into the tale. Like, Courtney Cox, bring back Dan Marino, like, bring back people from the from the second movie as well. Like, just bring back everyone in some capacity. Hell, bring back Einhorn or Ray Finkel.
Yeah, they could have, like, a Hannibal Lecter scene.
What if Einhorn gets out of prison and kidnaps Spike, Ace Ventura's monkey?
You know what? That might be...
There's your one!
It capturing Spike. That makes it personal.
Yeah. He's after Spike. Einhorn from the first movie, Ray Finkel gets out of prison somehow, goes after Spike, steals Spike, Ace Ventura's monkey and lifelong friend. And now he has to go on a worldwide chase. That would work too, because you could bring in like people that know Ace. You could bring in his partner at Miami Police Department from the first movie.
Juice.
Yeah,
and that's his name in fucking blank check. I don't remember.
Ace. You can bring back Courtney Cox at that point. You can bring back lots of people.
You know what'd be interesting though is in the first movie, Spike is in it, but he's not. He's not very prominent. He's hardly in it.
He's really very prominent in the second one.
Yeah, he's. I think. Let me double check on that. Yeah, Spike became very popular, and I think it's a great addition to the series and the character itself. I want to see when this cartoon came out. Do you remember the Ace Ventura cartoon came out?
I do. I was actually just thinking about it.
Well,
in my head.
Not when it came out, but if you've seen it, yeah, it came out in '95, so it was after the sequel. I don't remember the theme song too well, but I just remember he's like, he's as slippery as a frog, ooh, what a mess, ooh, way, yes, yes. I just remember that bit, something like that.
Why?
I do like the idea of someone captures Spike, so Ace Ventura comes out of retirement to find his best friend.
Yeah. I like that. You could have him, like, living in Alaska. Some shit, like in a cabin in Alaska.
Man.
Yeah. That'd be great. Because Jim Carrey, like, just beard, all bearded up. Ace Ventura hair, but with a giant, great big Jim Carrey bushy beard.
Would the beard have a swirl in it like a pompadour?
Obviously. It'd be like two ends of a toothpaste swirl. It'd be beautiful.
Would the abomination be included in this movie? And what I mean is
Tim Roth,
Ace Ventura Jr.
No,
where he is, I believe that's canon that kid is Ace Ventura's son.
It's not in the world that we live in nowadays. Nothing is canon anymore because it can all disappear like Thanos snapping his fingers. He'd be like, yeah, that didn't happen.
You're right.
And Ace Ventura, that prequel, no. I watched a clip of that movie once, and I was angry.
How'd the movie make you feel?
Angry. Yeah, that comedy starring that kid, and I'm like, no. No thanks. I think that's what I would pitch. If I had like a 5-minute elevator pitch with Jim Carrey to pitch him an Ace Ventura like sequel for the trilogy, I would say like, what do you think? Spike gets kidnapped and you have to come out of retirement. And I think that would lead to a lot of great gags. I think that is a strong enough reason and it has a serious enough undertone where you could get some stuff out of it and modern day gags and you can dive into a lot of different satires and things like that. I think it would be fun. I think that would be the way to go. Spike gets kidnapped. It's a world tour to find where in the world is Spike.
Let's make it happen.
Ace Ventura World Tour.
Yep, that's the name. We got the name, we got the plot, we got the cast, we got the director.
Now we just need Jim Carrey.
Hell yeah.
Get here. Maybe he's a listener.
I'll call him up.
Yeah, he's
give
busy.
Him a ring.
He's busy painting. Jerry Stewart plays Spike. He says, "Now Ace. Now, after all these years and not doing any movies, I learned to talk, but I picked up a weird accent cuz I was living in Indiana, PA."
Shit.
Oh, guys, see, this doesn't work because, like, if I'm not around you, I can't tell that you're laughing because it's just silent on your end. You just disappear. So I'm, like, waiting for a response, and it's, like, dead air for, like, 3 seconds, and then, holy shit.
Yeah, but, I don't know why this microphone doesn't pick up my laughter.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It was a good one. But indeed, Ace Ventura, when nature calls, is what we did. We just wrapped up our idea, our pitch for Ace Ventura World Tour. And with that, any questions before we close at the show?
Marry one, fuck one, kill one. Steve Odekirk, Steven Spielberg, and Martin Scorsese.
Kill Martin Scorsese. marry Spielberg to get him away from that annoying blonde lady. And
he's got money.
And money. And yeah, gotta get it with Steve. You seen his abs in Kung Pao? How about? Not what he looks like anymore, and he's bald, but, you know. Oh, he's bald in that movie, too, but wig.
You could wash your clothes on those abs.
Yeah, exactly. Man worked out on Bowflex.
did he give the signal?
Anyways, that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is our primary source. That's where we're posting the show to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get podcasts, hey, we are there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and other things. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook and type in The Brothers Movie Factory. Go ahead. Snoop around. I like to make memes of what watching each and every week, as well as post links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and Avid.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
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 All righty then.